Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to India Grid Trust Q2 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by Axis Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jiten Rushi from Axis Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, everyone. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of Axis Capital, I would like to welcome everyone for the Q2 FY23 earnings conference call of India Grid Trust. From the management, we have with us today Mr. Harsh Shah, CEO and Whole Time Director, Ms. Divya Bedi Verma, CFO, Ms. Meghana Pandit, Chief Investment Officer, and Mr. Satish Talmale, Chief Operating Officer. We thank the management for giving us this opportunity. We shall begin with the opening remarks from the management, followed by Q&A session. I would like to now hand over the call to the management for opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Am I audible?
Yes, sir, you are audible. Can you hear me?
Great. Thank you. So thanks, thanks, Rishi, and thanks, everyone for joining the call. I will take through the presentation in the initial part, and then I'll have my colleagues, Meghana, Satish, and Divya, talk about some of the specific aspects of the business in the presentation. And we'll take question and answer at the end of the presentation. Started on the slide number 3 of the presentation, where we are depicting our vision, which is to become the most admired yield vehicle in Asia. And we believe we are able to do the 4 pillars of strategy, which is focus on the business model, long-term contracts and low operating risks, focus on value accretive growth, keep providing predictable distribution, and manage the risk by managing an optimal capital structure. We believe we'll be able to become the most admired yield vehicle in Asia. Specifically to this quarter, on slide number 5, we have closed Aichi Solapur Transmission Limited for about 250 crores on 9th November 22. This deal was signed in quarter 2, but we have been able to close it in November 22. This is a very unique asset which connects the central and western grid to the southern grid, a very crucial asset. And it is acquired from 3 private sector developers, so it was a complicated transaction which took some time. But we are pretty happy about the value at which we acquired and the synergy with our portfolio that it's going to add. On the financial performance side, our revenue and EBITDA were 6% up year-on-year growth basis. Collections, we got back better versus last quarter. We are at about 96% this quarter. In terms of DPU, that we increased early on this year, continues the track record. We are distributing 3.3 rupees a unit, which is about 3.5% year-on-year growth versus last year. Our net debt to AUM at 57% still provides sufficient headroom for us to grow and acquire assets. Our AUM is increased marginally because of the acquisition that we spoke about and other factors that contribute to that. Our operating performance still remains robust at 99.3%, which will be covered in detail by Satish in the subsequent slide. We are very proud to achieve 1 million safe man hours milestone achieved. We are at it, and hopefully we can take this to 10. In terms of our implementation of DigiGrid, which is our digital asset management portfolio, which we have rolled out to entire portfolio now, and we are expected to yield synergies of this in the coming quarters and years. In general, all these initiatives are contributing to what we really stand for is a superior total return, sustainable increase in DPU, and stable operations. On the next slide, slide 6, quarter 2, FY23 of industry update. In general, the power sector seems to be in a pretty exciting place. Power demand is increasing. In general, a lot of initiatives taken by the government, including increasing the share of green as well as the reliability of grid, it is yielding into substantial amount of impact on the sectors that we operate in. In general, this transmission spend is substantially planned to be higher in the next 5 years and estimated to be about 1.4 lakh crores. The overall additions, both in terms of circuit kilometers and MVA in FY23, are in line, but we expect these are going to increase as we go ahead because all the energy highways that we need to build for achieving the transition, energy transition, would eventually result into substantial capex and investment in the transmission space as well. In addition, which is unique, which has come out over the last quarter, is really the Ministry of Power has come out with guiding principles for monetization of transmission assets in the public sector through AOMT, which is Acquire, Operate, Maintain and Transfer based on PPP model. Basically, what this means is that MOP has provided guidance on how state utilities can privatize certain assets without giving the asset completely to a private sector and eventually having a buyback or a transfer back to the government, which we believe is going to open up more brownfield monetizations of utility assets in the country. So that's about what's happening in the industry and how we are approaching it. On the quarter two FY23 operational performance, I'll invite Satish, the Chief Operating Officer, to take you through the performance of the quarter. Satish?
Yeah. Thanks, Ash. Hi, everyone, and happy to present operational performance for Q2. Starting with safety, we achieved 1 million safe man hours, and we would like to maintain the same status quo or make it better with a zero incident quarter. So we had no major incident in quarter two. Regarding availability, portfolio-wide, we achieved 99.3%. I would take your attention on the right-hand side where the bar chart of availability is shown. So you can see majority of the assets are more than 98% normative availability target. RTCL, there was a highway diversion job which was undertaken. The impact of that you are seeing in the availability numbers, but this is commercially already recovered from NHI. So practically there is no impact on RTCL as far as revenues are concerned. The next asset, the JKPTL, where you are seeing 97.44, that is due to a outage caused by the transformer. So this was the rarest of the rare fault which encountered into transformer. So we could able to attend that with a site repair, and that got restored in the month of October. And on the NER, as we discussed in the last quarter, there was a forced outage due to the unprecedented floods. So happy to share that the both the circuits of NER is restored with a temporary emergency restoration system, and the permanent restoration activities are ongoing and expected to be completed in the month of February. Coming back to the left-hand side, on reliability, I think we are achieving one of the best benchmark data point on trips per line, and always trying to make it better as we move quarter over quarter. On digital asset management, all the assets are now monitored by a digital platform. So all day-to-day field operations activity, including UHS quality, the entire process of operations are being monitored through a mobile application as well as from the back-end enterprise asset management platform. On the emergency preparedness, while we did our NER restoration, happy to share that now we have our own team. We coined them as a quick reaction team, and they are trained now how to build the emergency restoration system in the shortest possible time. In this quarter, we also measured our GHG emissions across the portfolio as a part of our ESG initiative. And if you look at the numbers, we are one of the lowest contributor to these emissions. And we will put our efforts to improve on that as well. On the key indicators, which is there on the right-hand side table, so number of trips per line, we are at 0.15. This is increase compared to last year quarter because of the increased frequencies of thunderstorms and the lightning events across the country. And we are working at long-term mitigative actions on these challenges as well. The focus on training continued in the quarter on the EHS training largely. Again, LTI is zero. We are maintaining the track record of zero. There is an improved reporting culture on unsafe conditions and awareness, which is more of a proactive management of all the EHS hazard across the portfolio. So rooftop solar generation also has increased compared to last quarter. Overall, on utility solar, 100 megawatt, there is a slight increase in generation as well, and also our CUF percentage overall. So we are maintaining consistent track record as far as availability and reliability of the assets are concerned. Thank you, and we'll forward it to Divya.
Thank you, Satish. Good evening, everyone. I am happy to present the quarter two financial performance for the trust. We have clocked in a revenue of 580 crores for the quarter with an EBITDA of 535 crores. Comparing to the same quarter last year, it shows a growth of 6% in revenue and EBITDA. NDCF generated for the quarter stands at 280 crores, which showcases a growth of 25% on a real term basis, excluding one-off item, because in previous year quarter we have repaid the factoring, so the growth is almost same, no major changes. DPU for the quarter stands at 3.30 rupees as compared to the previous quarter. Previous year we were paying 3.19 rupees, which showcases a steady growth of 4%. Collections for the quarter are at 96% as compared to last year. Quarter was 105%. But we see a good catch up in this year because the quarter one was at 77% of the collections. DSO days at September 22 stands at 66 days as compared to 52 days last year at September 21. So month on month, if we see the collection efficiency, July was at 79%, August at 110%, and September at 100%. Overall quarter was 96%. So this financial performance also gave us a belief and showcase a stable revenue of the trust in DCF on a year-on-year basis. I will move to slide number 9, which details about our DPU for the quarter. DPU for the quarter is approved by the board with 3.30 rupees, which will be paid in form of interest, 3.11 rupees, and a capital repayment of 0.19 rupees. Our standing units at the end of the quarter was at 70 crores, which then we made a gross distribution of 231 crores. The record date for quarter two distribution would be 16th November, and a tentative distribution date would be on November 26th. The NAV for the quarter as on quarter end stood at 135.30 rupees. With this distribution, we would have overall distributed around 65.11 rupees per unit, with the total amounting to 3,415 crores to the investors, including the quarter two distribution. The right-hand side quarterly distribution trend showcases our year-on-year growth, which is scaling up on an average rate of 3-4%. And we are on track to meet our DPU guidance of 13.20 rupees for the year. Moving to the next slide, which showcases NDCF waterfall from EBITDA to NDCF generation. EBITDA at SPV level recorded at 531 crores. And beyond adjustments of finance cost, working capital movement, capex, tax at SPV, generation at SPV, and then expenses at IGT and the finance cost, and the major taxes at IGT, the generation for the quarter stood at 280 crores. As for our guidance, we continue to distribute 231 crores. So this quarter, we will replenish a reserve of around 49 crores. Last quarter, we had dipped into a reserve, and this quarter, we are replenishing the reserve. So at trust level, we have healthy reserves to meet for any unforeseen collection discrepancies or any other factor. And that's for the quarter, and for the subsequent slides, I request Meghna to take it over.
Thanks, Vivian. Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm on slide number 11.
Spending a couple of minutes on the balance sheet position, IndiGrid remains AAA rated by all the three rating agencies. The average cost of debt at the portfolio level for a borrowing of around 13,000 crore is about 7.51%. At the end of 30th September, we closed with a cash balance of about 1,151 crore, which includes around 230 odd crore for distribution for Q2, almost about 380 crore for DESRA, and additional amount that we utilized for acquiring Raichur Solapur, which closed in the month of November. Out of the total 13,000 crore of gross borrowing, almost 77% is fixed rate borrowing, which allows us to insulate against the interest rate environment currently, which is on the higher side. So we are at a very healthy net debt to AUM percentage of 57%, leaving significant headroom for acquisitions with a cap of 70% as per regulation. Along with that, the interest coverage ratio stands at a healthy number of 2.19x. The incremental debt that we raised in Q2 of FY23 also stood at around 7.5%. Looking at the pie chart and size, the gross borrowing proportion between bank loan and NCD is almost about 60-40%. Even amongst the NCDs, it's a tight holding between mutual funds, corporates, retail HNI, insurance companies, banks, similarly loans from public sector banks as well as private sector banks. Looking at the graph towards the bottom, the repayment refinancing schedule, as you can see, there is no bunch maturity which we have been working towards over the past several quarters, and we've ensured that in any particular year, the refinancing percentage is not more than 10-12% of the gross borrowing. FY23 remains, as on 30th of September, had a repayment of about 2.73, which, as we speak, already stands refinanced. So we have a very well diversified and termed out borrowing profile as depicted. Moving on to slide number 12, we continue to deliver superior risk-adjusted total return to the investor. Total return is depicted with the distribution, which is almost 62% that IndiGrid has delivered since the time it got listed till 30th of September, and the price change of almost 43%, which translates into an annualized return of 14%. Compared with pure play debt securities on the left-hand side, or depicted by GSEC bond, 10-year as well as 30-year. Similarly, on the right-hand side, comparing with pure play equity in NSE 500, NSE Infra, BSC Utilities, as you can see, IndiGrid continues to deliver risk-adjusted returns. Risk being detected by the beta, as you can see, IndiGrid beta is 0.08, which is almost close to zero compared to the other pure play equity indices as well as other equity securities. Moving on to slide 13, this is about the Raichur Solapur action that we have recently completed. Raichur Solapur Transmission Company Limited is an interstate transmission asset which was built out in 2014. It has been operational since 2014. It's a tariff-based competitively built project which connects Raichur in Karnataka and Solapur in Maharashtra. It's a 765 kV single circuit line with a total line length of about 206 kilometers. This project was also awarded on a BOOM basis, build, own, operate, and maintain, and is also part of the Punjab-Senegotan mechanism deal. The TSA tenure of 35 years, balance remaining life is about 27 years. We acquired this project from a consortium of three private developers, Patel Engineering, Simplex Infrastructure, and DS Transco, and the of the project or the enterprise valuation was close to about 250 crores. We are expecting that this acquisition will add 10 to 11 crores of net distributable cash flow per year. Being the ISTS TBCB project, it fits perfectly into the IndiGrid strategy of acquiring operation assets, which has had a history of almost 7 to 8 years. Similarly, the payment mechanism brings in POC with minimum counterparty risk. With our existing portfolio in the state of Maharashtra and on the western side, per se, there are significant operational synergies which this project also brings to the table.
Moving on to the business outlook that we are looking at, three, four aspects that we are looking at. One is focus on maintaining stable operations with the perspective of predictable and sustainable distribution. I look at acquisitions and maintaining and delivering increased DPU guidance of 13.2 for this year. On the acquisitions or the growth pipeline, we are seeing a significant activity in the transmission space itself, with almost 1400 billion rupees of transmission projects which are getting added to the grid, which essentially means that private developers, as and when the projects become on, they will monetize these projects, and the grid will be keen to look at acquiring them. In addition to that, under the National Monetization Plan, also there seems to be a healthy growth pipeline of almost 450 billion. In addition to power transmission, we are also exploring acquisition opportunities on the solar side as well as adjacent utility scale battery storage. Parallel to the growth strategy, I also look at improving the balance sheet strength by looking at optimizing the interest cost and allocating the tenor for the incremental acquisition to look at. Similarly, maintaining adequate liquidity to mitigate any uncertainties that may come about. On the asset management side, our focus continues to be on maintaining more than 99.5% availability. Similarly, maximizing rents across each of the projects. With DigiGrid getting implemented across the portfolio, idea is to improve and expand its functionality in order to improve stability, as well as focus on ensuring world-class EHS and ESG practices. On the policy initiatives, we continue to remain active. We are working with all the regulators to try and streamline any of the tax anomalies which are there between equity as well as InvITs. Similarly, certain other initiatives like index inclusion, specifically for REITs and InvITs, which will allow improving the depth in the market, is something that we are also working on. All of it focusing on us delivering superior returns, sustaining increase in the DPU and stable operations. I think with this, we will stop here and will invite to get into the Q&A session, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask a question may kindly press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, kindly press star 1 to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Rahul Marathe from ICICI Prudential. Kindly proceed.
Yeah. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. So I was looking at the slide consolidated EBITDA to IndiGrid waterfall, slide 10. So in that we can see that finance cost has some impact of ECB loan refinancing. So can you spell out the impact as in the quantum there? Hello.
Yeah. So basically, yes, we have repaid our ECB, and this time, since our ECB was completely hedged, this interest cost is net of the ECB hedge income, which we have earned because of scaling up the forward contract. So that was around 9 to 10 crores.
Okay. And do we currently have any outstanding ECB or all the ECB is repaid?
Everything is repaid.
Okay. So, yeah. That was question from my side.
Hello. Yeah, is it operator? Can you...
Yes, the next question is from the line of Ravish Chandra. Can you kindly proceed?
Shah. Most welcome back. The question is, looks like the acquisition plan is not in the very near future, in 23-24. It is only by 25-28, something I saw. Is it like that? Or before 28, we are having plan to go for acquisition 1,400 billion.
One of them is a framework asset which we are looking at, which is about 1,500 crores called KTL. So that is one of the largest acquisitions that we are looking at right now. Besides that, also there are certain acquisitions we are looking at, but they are not at a stage where we can disclose about it. But KTL is already disclosed in part of the framework asset. So that's something which is live that we are looking at.
Okay. And government monetization plan, MOP, it looks like it is more of lease rather than a direct acquisition. So cost of acquisition might get reduced, isn't it?
Not really sure of that, because it is going to be largely in, you know, the way the roads are getting monetized in India, right? Like a TOT. That you acquire a road, you acquire right of a particular period, and then you pay back. In any case, the moment there is a contract which is 25, 35 years live, the difference between a BOM and BOT is relatively lesser in terms of the overall cost. So I won't read much into that.
And best wishes. Happy with the results.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kothari from Unique Portfolio Managers. Can you proceed?
Hi, good afternoon and thank you. So we had this practice of sharing this indicative DPU over our lifetime. I mean, any intent to restart the practice again, maybe on some frequency?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? We had a practice of sharing DPU.
Yes, indicative DPU across the across assets, what upon revenue would be used to share this.
Correct. No, I think it's a good suggestion. We used to share it very early on. It was not a guidance, but it was an indication of how it may look from current assets plus growth assets. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good suggestion. We will try to see if we can publish it.
Fair enough. So for now, to put it differently, this 13.2 that we do on an annual basis, this is sustainable for how long, assuming no new asset comes in?
So, this typically, when we do the projection or increase, we work in a way that at least it's sustainable for 5 to 7 years. And similarly, I think even this is done with the same assumption in mind.
Okay, fair enough. And just last to confirm, there was no factoring that we did this quarter, right?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you. Welcome back and all the best.
Thank you.
Participants, if you wish to ask a question, kindly press *1. The next question is from the line of Pritesh, an individual investor. Can you proceed?
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you, sir.
Yeah. So I have three questions. The first question is regarding we saw a sudden movement in management. For example, first went away and then, you know, Jyoti was appointed the CEO. Then again, within a couple of months, there is a change in management. So just wanted to know, you know, if there is any material reason with respect to that. Second question is with respect to AUM. You know, can we, you know, on a ballpark basis, can we expect the current run rate of addition of AUM to continue over the next couple of years or so? Also, the 1500 crore Sundam project, then what would be a rough timeline for that, for acquisition? So, yeah, these are the two questions.
Cool. So, the last one I'll take first. The KTL project, I think it's very difficult to give a timeline on when we acquire it, but It looks like that we will be able to do it by the end of the quarter, because we also have an agreement till then, the counterparty to acquire by December 22. So hopefully it should happen by then. The other project which we have, Kalam, which is about 200-250 crores, that is then going to be finished by quarter three of next year. So over next 1 year, I would say that we clearly have visibility of about 1700 or 1800 crores of AUM getting added, which is around, you know, 7-8% growth. I think beyond that, as we have said before, we are not into a year-on-year AUM growth business. We would look for assets which are reasonably priced and meet the criteria. Looking at what is happening in the interest rate scenario and elsewhere, we are hoping that we would find such assets going forward. So we will look to acquire as and when we get something which is reasonably priced. On the management change, I would say a lot of things are public already. But I can say there is nothing which is, you know, a big material development either side. So that would be a clarification. But otherwise, almost everything is public around that. Thank you.
Can I ask the following question?
Sure.
So with respect to the maintaining the growth rate, are you looking to, you know, raise additional capital again? I know we are at 58% right now, but would that be on the card? Also, in one of the slides, I saw that with respect to the industry leadership, we are working for inclusion of InvIT also in India, etc. If you see, means right now also margin on the SPV is not allowed on InvIT. It is allowed for lot of opportunities which have got listed after that. So this question has been asked in earlier con calls also. So a little push, you know, little push, not a push, but writing to the exchange with respect to that. And to, you know, the can bring the instrument on par with other listed instruments.
Sure. So thanks, Vivin. I think on the second point, I'll take first. On the margin, and as we said before also, it's not appropriate, and we've been talking to exchanges and SEBI with that, but as a company, there is very limited that we can do on it. I think it is investor prerogative. Investors should write to SEBI, because at the end of the day, SEBI is to protect investor interests. So investors write to SEBI that we do want this done. I'm sure they'll do something about it. Right? But beyond the point that we rightly put it, it's very awkward for the company to go and push SEBI that, you know, allow this to be treated as a security for pledge. But I think what informal interactions is that investors should approach regulator. That's the feedback that we got. That why is company approaching? Let investors approach. So that would be my 2 bits on that. So write to SEBI. They're very receptive on opinion from investors, especially on these kind of things. So would be great if you guys write, it would help the call. On the earlier question you mentioned on using, yeah, so I think 57% is substantially lower, and we'll get to use it as and when we see assets. I mean, 57% means that we can acquire 6,000-7,000 crores of assets without raising equity. But that takes 68-69%, which is very close to our limit. So it's a good headroom available for us to grow whenever there are large M&A assets available. And we will look to acquire when the price is right, the asset is right, and we'll keep the flexibility with us.
Okay. Also, JK, TPL, you know, because of the transformer event, the availability was 97%. So, any material revenue effect it would have?
To give you perspective of JKPTL size in the overall size of the revenue of IndiGrid is about 2%. We're talking about 2% of 2%, right? So it's definitely not material. I don't think it needs to be concerned at an enterprise level.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. That answers my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, kindly press star 1. The next question is from the line of Shravan S. from Avendus Capital. Kindly proceed.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I just have one question. In case of JKQCL, there was an impact due to outage and there was an availability issue over there. So I just wanted to understand how all this impact in the terms of financials, like your revenue, and is there any penalty which you guys have to pay to that, making the availability?
So, okay, so I just answered that question in the last participant, but JKPTL put together an annual base about 2% of the top line for IndiGrid, so it's fairly small, and the amount of revenue loss is in 0.01 or 0.02%, type. So it's fairly small. It doesn't impact overall profitability or sustainability of IndiGrid. It's a very small asset. We're just disclosing it in two spirits that, you know, even the smaller assets deserve the disclosure on that. So that's why it's disclosed. Otherwise, it's fairly small.
So do we take any precautions so to avoid any major issue on some other assets also? Like some precautions?
Oh, yeah, clearly. I mean, we take a lot of precautions as Satish described in his presentation. But at the end of the day, we are operating 54 lines and substations, right? So at any point in time, there can be a flood or an earthquake or something somewhere. But because of our scale, we ensure that, you know, while we take precautions, none of the assets are really large enough to make a big dent. And if there are certain assets or lines that are large enough, we ensure that there are double precautions taken over there.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants with questions, kindly press star 1. The next question is from the line of Rahul Marathe from ICICI Prudential. Kindly proceed.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question once more. So, there are certain news articles where we can see that KKR is tying up with Sterlite Power to create a renewable energy platform. And we also are exposed, a small portion of our portfolio is exposed to the renewable power segment. So do we see any kind of conflict of interest that we have a sponsor which is creating a separate platform outside of this?
Sure. So one question, KKR as a sponsor has limited role in the IndiGrid. They are more as a manager. We always had, KKR always had flexibility to do other platforms within the renewable energy space because as IndiGrid, we are addressing a very, I would say, limited set of opportunities in the power space, right? One is transmission, second is within renewable also only select counterparties, right? Good counterparties. So we are addressing, I would say, less than 5-10% of overall renewable energy market where we are looking to acquire. Whereas, again, what I understand the JV which is done with Sterlite is to address C&I opportunities, which is more private contracts and bilateral contracts, which are in no way in target or even, you know, site of IndiGrid to be acquired. So I think it's fairly, I would say, independent of what we do. So I don't see a potential conflict out there because of that.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anirudh Singhi from Dalal & Broacha. Kindly proceed.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, hi. So could you just help me reconcile the 11 crore surplus from the new asset? So as per my understanding, the revenue is 38 crores and 7-8% operation expense, so about 3 crores of operation expense. And even if we assume we take 250 crores of debt, at 7.5%, that's about 19 crores. So 19 plus 21 crores, our surplus should be about 16 crores, right? Or am I missing something?
I think one thing, which is, yeah, go on, Meghna, please.
I'll take this one. So this asset also has a decline curve. So this is the NDCF number that we've given as an average over a period of time. And that's how it comes to 36 crores, I think, is the range for the next couple of years. So that comes down to around 26 crores. So on an average, that's the NDCF number.
Okay, so in the first 2 years, it will be higher, right, than the 11 crores number that we mentioned?
Yeah.
If I can add on that, I think what you are calculating is on an entire 250 crore as a consideration, whereas the 250 crore included certain cash because the transaction was agreed or signed some time ago, and therefore it includes certain cash on which there is no interest to be paid. So interest liability will be lesser than what you have completed.
Right. So in the first year, maybe our surplus will be closer to 20 odd crores, right?
Yeah, we can't give exact numbers of the fact, right? So we can guide you directionally of how to do the fact, but can't
fair enough.
Yeah.
Secondly, you know, the assumption that we do not acquire any more assets, how much debt are we retiring every year?
So at a consolidated level, we are not retiring any debt because we are at a 57%.
Okay.
We would start retiring debt when we reach 65-68%, then only it makes sense. At this point in time, if you are at 57%, there is no point going to 56%, right? So.
Yeah. Sure. That's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, kindly press star 1. The next question is from the line of Chandra Mauli, an individual investor. Kindly proceed.
Hello, sir. Pardon me for a very basic question. I am a new investor. But what will happen to the asset after the TSA? I mean, you said that there is an average of 29 years in the presentation. And some assets are, you know, might get the TSA may get for existing before. What will happen?
Sure. So, we try to address it in a very concise manner, but in some of the earlier transcripts, we have elaborated in depth. Many of the assets, especially the interstate transmission system assets, are on a boom basis. So we will remain continued owner of those assets. There can be potentially three scenarios. One is that there is a replacement value type of tariff that is awarded to them. Second is there is a cost plus regulated tariff that is allocated to them. And third is that we don't need the transmission line. Then we just sell the metal and, you know, pay the distribution to the investors. In either of the cases, there is a substantial chunk. And as we disclosed in our presentation, the overall size of metal that is there is about 330,000 tons of steel and about 121,000 metric ton of aluminium. If you were to calculate even their value on today's value base, it will be a substantial size of a market cap. And therefore, on a foot-like basis, with a little bit of inflation, there will be a significant payment if the line's life is not extended. I mean, it's 30 years ahead, difficult for any of us to project it, but the principles are same, that the assets belong to us, and either they will be compensated for respectable tariff on that, or you will end up selling the metal of the asset and make good one-time value of that. It could be there. Our most educated guess is that the electricity will continue to be required to be transmitted at extra high voltage, and therefore there will be a reasonable amount of compensation that will be made to the asset even beyond 30 years.
Absolutely fine, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. For questions, kindly press star 1. The next question is from the line of Tanvi Surveth, an individual investor. Kindly proceed.
Hi. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So, I just had a question around the waterfall for the NDCF and the gross borrowing slide. So it says for FY23 we have around 273 odd crores of repayment, and then in the NDCF we have two finance costs that have been shown, one at the SPV level and one at the trust level. So that is around 239 odd crores at the trust level and around 14 odd crores at the SPV level. So just wanted to understand how to read this, because it looks like we would be almost repaying everything for this year, right? But should we look at the trust finance cost, or is it the finance cost, or is it the sum of both from the SPV and the trust?
Sorry, so let me address that in a simple way as we can. You see interest expense at the SPV level, because till last quarter we had one loan at the SPV level, one of the SPV, which we have repaid this quarter. And therefore, next quarter onwards, the finance cost at SPV level will probably be zero. And therefore, the confusion will go away, right? Before this, we used to borrow at both levels, and that's the reason that you see it at both levels. The second question you asked on the refinancing, I think it has no impact. We just refinance it. 900 crores is about less than 10% of our overall borrowing. So that we are going to refinance as and when it matures. I hope that addresses that question.
Yes, thanks a lot. So that addresses it. So I think from the next quarter onwards, the finance cost at the IGT level will be the most that will matter, right?
Yes, even right now also that's what matters, but the 14.1 might confuse you because that's SPV, so that's already refinanced this quarter, so next quarter will be zero over there.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pradyumna Dalmia from Lansdowne Investment. Can you proceed?
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Okay. Hi, Hirsch. Welcome back. My question was about regarding the management shuffle that we've seen in the last quarter. Just was wondering if you could throw some light on, why it happened, and then this provides some reassurance to investors that, going forward, there will be more stability in the management.
Oh, thanks. So I think, as I said, a lot of it is public already, but I will tell you that my reason for change of personnel or leader size and at Azure Power, I think the reasons are already made public for my resignation, and that's something which is there. And as I was considering the alternatives over there, there was a vacancy at Syndicate that was created, and I think that was a natural, I would say, choice for me, considering that I've been there the longest, and it's been the longest thing for my life as well. So that was it. I think on going forward days also, I think the way investors can read it is that the way IndiGrid is created over the last 6 years, and I've played a sizable role in that, it is not people specific, right? At the end of the day, it is kind of made as an institution. We have a very deep management team in place, and therefore, at the end of the day, there are always people related changes that business goes through. But the way the institution is created, and I'm talking about independent of me or anybody else for that matter, is that the business and the stability will continue beyond people. Right? And therefore, I would rather comfort investors on that they shouldn't worry about beyond the point in terms of one or two changes in the management. And I think the business is robust, systems and processes are robust. So we have created the platform for 30, 40 years or longer, and that should continue to deliver what we had planned for. I hope that addresses your question.
Thanks a lot for the clarification, Harsh, but I can only say from my investor's point of view that we hope to have you for as long as possible at IndiGrid.
Thank you.
You have created this platform, and we've really been very, very pleased and happy with the way things have panned out.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Kotari from Unique Portfolio Managers. Kindly proceed.
Hi. If you can throw some light on, so over last maybe a year or two, we did see a dry up in terms of deals that we made, etc. So, in terms of inquiries or pipelines, are things moving in the right direction? We did talk about in the presentation that there's a lot of assets coming up, but in the future.
Sure.
Currently, any change that you see in terms of what we can bid for?
Oh, yeah. So, Again, see, I'll start with first point of view. You know, we are focused on delivering stable returns, and neither am I getting evaluated, nor probably investors should evaluate based on how many thousand crores of assets is getting acquired every year. We will acquire if something makes sense, and many a times as you would see in even normal markets and investments, there is euphoria on the assets and you may not want to acquire because they are not available at the right price or there is too much competition, several factors take place. Right? So I would suggest that please do not evaluate us based on, you know, how many thousand crores we acquired each year or each quarter. Maybe in a 3 to 5 year is a better horizon to look at, because that provides sufficient time frame for investment manager or management to acquire the right set of assets for the right reason. So that's just a opening remark on that. Coming to the sector, I think IndiGrid will do well when, considering we are, the way we are structured, the way our balance sheet is, the way we have acquired assets till now, we will do well relatively in times of volatility, where there is cash crunch, higher interest costs, lesser asset value, volatility, because that is the time for us to look for stable assets at a reasonable price. Right? And that's something which would be an environment we would love. At least looking at, and again, we don't predict macros, but looking at the economics, that macroeconomic scenario that's going on, maybe increased costs, lesser liquidity, might result in, you know, more volatility in the market, which might throw up better opportunities for us to acquire. Right? So I would say, I don't know whether that's going to happen in 3 months or 2 years, but at least the tea leaves are seeming to be favorable over there. So that's one. Second, in terms of what is in our control and our strategy, is that what we are doing is to figure out sectors and assets which we can add value to. And therefore, we did renewables some time ago. We are looking at battery storage projects, which we think are the future, and they are part of almost extension of transmission projects of electricity projects. So we do see those bids coming out actively. Again, we can't guarantee a win because it depends on the return and risk that operate in that sector. But we do see that opening up well, and we are looking to bid for that, right? And if we win, that will be a chunkier asset that gets added in the portfolio. Besides that, as you might have seen, we are also doing a little bit of development, and we acquired one project over last year on under construction stage, and that's going on well, and we'll be finishing that next year. Well, at a platform level, it's a very small project, just about 200-250 crores, but it is a very strategic move for us because we want to build those capabilities, confidence and teams to ensure that we can, however small, do development as well, because we'll remain within the framework of steady and, you know, 90% operating assets. But this 10% throws a good opportunity for us to bid for assets, execute them well, and, you know, have a better accretion. So, and the last one is we are pretty happy about the MOP announcement and the policy of monetization. So at least they are being clear about what should be done. So again, timelines can be 1 year to 5 years of when public monetization takes place, but as and when comes, it can be significant. So the way to look at it is, you're looking at plain vanilla acquisition of transmission assets that we did in the past. We are looking at a little bit of diversification on renewable and battery storage. Third, we are looking at bidding for some of the transmission assets, which is a significant pipeline. And the fourth is public asset monetization. So between all of these four, again, we don't know which one will fire when, but we believe as long as we have, you know, enough value prop in all these four, one or two will result into a reasonable amount of growth for us.
Fair enough. Point well taken. So in terms of the macro environment you mentioned, where we might do well, your liquidity crunch, higher interest rates, uncertainty, etc. So that has not come yet. In terms of deal flow that you are seeing, it's as what it was in maybe 12, 18 months back.
Yeah, correct. I think that's evident in the market, right? So hopefully it comes. Let's see.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. No, great. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pritesh, an individual investor. Kindly proceed.
Yeah. So this again, coming back to JKTPL, I know that the contribution to revenue is very insignificant. But just to understand, if the line efficiency is not maintained, then do we lose the revenue for the entire quarter? I mean, so that would be correct for the other assets, right? Also, right? So I just wanted to understand how much time period revenue are we losing in case we don't maintain the availability.
No, it's all proportionate. It is proportionate to what we lose. We don't lose revenue for the whole quarter. It is proportionate. So again, theoretically speaking, if in a quarter your revenue is 7 crores or 10 crores, instead of 99.75%, you have 97%. You lose 97 by 100%, so about 3-4% of that quarter's of revenue. So it is on a proportionate basis. It is not full quarter revenue that you lose.
Okay. Now, what I understood was that if below a particular threshold level, the availability is not there, then we are losing significant amount of revenue for that quarter because it is a performance-ready kind of a deal. So that understanding is not correct.
No, it is a proportionate one. So you have a target availability divided by annual availability, so that's a proportionate one that you lose. It's not, as it only means it's zero, the rest
is. Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thanks a lot for everybody to join the call. I believe today was quite specific investor call, so thank you for taking out time. We, as started, we are committed to predictable distribution and growing that, and we are focused on that strategy. We keep executing that and look forward to your continued support on that. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Axis Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.